You're listening to episode 23 of the Talentopoly podcast, where we discuss some of the best links posted on talentopoly.com each week. I'm Jared Brown.
And I'm Brandon Corbin.
Of course you are.
Of course I am.
And what is Brandon Corbin drinking tonight?
I'm drinking my cellar number 8. And unfortunately,
I knew you were going to say that.
I know, it's the same one.
If that tells you anything,
like I've had a lot of meetings at night. We've had that speakeasy thing last night, so I've been drinking a lot of wine out, and I haven't been drinking any at home. And so I've got this one bottle, and I know you probably shouldn't even be drinking it like 3-4 days later. No, I'm like 2 weeks into this bottle.
Wow. And I'm surprised it lasted that long.
Oh no, it hasn't. It has – the alcohol has. Mm. The flavor and the taste hasn't. It is ass. It is awful.
Do you do you have like one of those stoppers to put in there?
No.
You just leave it
open?
I
got a cork. And I can tell it's getting worse as every time I pop that cork off, it's just like boom. And
some
it just gets more and more powerful as you know, each time I pop it off.
Maybe it's fermenting more.
It probably is. The alcohol content of this is probably like a 24% now. But that sounds amazing, actually. It does the job. It's very hot. It's like it's like a Goldschlager almost, where it like burns your tongue as it goes down. It's not a fun experience, but it's doing the trick.
Good.
What about you?
I'm killing off a bottle of Bailey's I found down in the bar room just now.
Down in the bar room.
I told you about the bar room, right?
I know.
Yeah, dude, it's awesome. You got to hang out sometime, drink some wine in the bar room.
Yeah, you haven't figured out that I'm completely antisocial.
No, I figured that out. But yeah, so I've got the Baileys going. Figured
nice.
It's a cold night out. Good night for some Baileys. And I accessorized a little bit here. So I have the whiskey stones. Have you heard of these things?
Uh-uh.
This is like all I wanted for Christmas. I was super excited to get this. They are actually stones that have been rounded off and polished and everything, and you put them in the freezer so that you can use them as in place of ice, and you don't have to worry about diluting your drink, and it just looks fucking awesome, and you can say you're drinking something on the rocks.
Except for when you drink too much and you swallow one of them.
That would be bad. Yes.
But they're polished, so when they pass, it won't be too unpleasant.
They're not small either, so it would be a feat.
Uh-oh. Apparently, I've swallowed one.
While I was down there, though, I picked out what I'm going to drink for the next podcast already. Like, I'm already getting excited about this.
I think you're a functioning alcoholic.
Might be. Very happy.
Where's Steven?
Yes, where is Steven? So, Steven, as we explained in the last podcast, and I just want to like clarify this a little bit more in case we glossed over it too quickly.
Because he was fired.
Yeah, he was fired from the job he did for free. For thinking about using Android. No. What happened is Steve was a freelancer and is no longer a freelancer. He got a great job in the UK where he lives, which is convenient. And he he's heading up a design team for a company over there in the UK. So he's got some people that he's doing some hiring. He's got some people working under him.
Wow. So they got pretty low standards.
Apparently.
Oh. Just kidding.
So he's got this job now, and Steven was dedicated. I mean, the guy was staying up until 2 a.m. to do the podcast with us. Really, he was up that late every night anyway. So it wasn't too bad for him. But now with the job, he can't swing that anymore.
Our baby's all grown up.
He is. So hopefully we'll get him on the podcast every once in a while. I'm hoping to still get him on some of the interviews and stuff. And he was really great at lining up some of those interviews for us. So I'm sure he'll be back around once in a while. But because of his job, he is not able to stay up late enough to do our awesome podcast. But in other news,
what else is happening?
We've been working on the site. We are, and by we, I mean myself and another Talentopoly member, Edward Rudd. I'm not schizophrenic. I actually am working with somebody else who, Ed really helped spearhead our conversion of the code base from Rails 2.3.4 to Rails 3.1.
So being someone who, you know, has only tinkered with Rails, what all would be involved in that kind of transition? Because like a lot of times you hear when, you know, so I'm, you know, again, I'm a PHP guy.
Right.
And you know, when the next one comes out, there's almost nothing that I need to worry about as far as kind of changing. You know what I mean?
Yep. And that hopefully will be the case. You know, hopefully the changes are much more minor now. But the reason why they were a big change from 2 to 3 is that Rails, at least early on, had always really focused, and rightfully so, in my opinion, they had always focused on how do we make great tools for the developer. Well, the way that those tools were working, and the fact that it, you know, Ruby is a slower language to begin with, plus the way they were building some of the stuff in Rails 1 and 2, it was a little bit slower. I mean, a lot slower than if you were going to do a PHP code base or something like that. But what some other people did was they were coming up with something called MERB, a different framework that borrowed a lot of the concepts from Rails, but also kind of better straddled that line between performance and giving great things to the developers so that you didn't get too far off in the weeds. And some people were starting to go over towards MERBs. So the Rails guys and the MERBs guys got together, and I don't know exactly who initiated or how that worked out, but they decided, let's combine our efforts and let's make a version of Rails that inherits a lot of what we were doing with MERB and what where you guys are going with Rails. And so now we're Rails 3, they really overhauled a ton of stuff under the hood, and they cleaned up inconsistencies in the framework and the API and syntax. Like, well, why do we use the syntax here this way, but over here we do it a totally different way? So they cleaned up all these inconsistencies, made it run better. Under the hood, it's actually really nice now. And just did a huge spring cleaning. It took them about a year to do Rails 3. So
that transition, though, like, I mean, it basically, if you would then try to run your, you know, 2.3 code base on 3, a lot of shit wouldn't work.
Exactly.
Like, that's a good thing. Like, where PHP said, okay, fine, we'll leave the old shit in there and we'll add the new stuff. And
right.
So you have this inconsistency. So there is, there's pluses and minuses to both ways of handling it.
There is. And, you know, like I was saying, hopefully now it won't be too big of a change now that, okay, we've got a new foundation and we feel really good about it. Now we'll hopefully as a community just iterate on the framework and not wholesale swap it out for something, which is kind of what happened to an extent.
Yeah.
It took us about 20 hours to convert the site, mostly Ed's time of converting the code base over. So it wasn't awful, but, you know, it was not a... like clean, you know, just like real easy upgrade.
Sure.
So.
Well, good. Congratulations. And that's running on production now?
It is. And it's been up there for about 2 weeks or so. So it allowed us to switch over to the new stack, the Bamboo stack on Heroku, which I was excited to move over to. We're running on the new version of Ruby now. So Ruby went from 1.8.x to 1.9. And it doesn't sound like a big change, but performance-wise, there were huge changes in there. So
have you been able to tell a difference, like just in overall response times and all that through?
The response times, like, just feels a little faster when you're using it, but New Relic reports a minor change. The memory of the server on Heroku, the server instances of Thin and everything, those are down by about 15 megabytes. I actually have a blog post planned that I'm going to write up about this, but the change isn't that drastic. And part of the reason is that Active Record, which is how you interact with the database in Rails 3, actually got slower in Rails 3.0 from Rails 2.3.4 because they rewrote a whole bunch of stuff and they made the API part for Active Record a lot nicer, but they didn't get the performance part nailed right then. So then in 3.1, they made it a little bit better, and in 3.2, it's going to get even faster. So it kind of all balanced out. Like, I didn't get a huge performance increase, but at least now... hopefully the foundation is much, much better. And I have looked at some of the source code for Rails, and it definitely looks cleaner, and the ways that they're doing things is much nicer now.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Hey, let me ask you. You know, I've been wanting to bookmarklet for Talonopoly.
Really?
And, for quite a while, and I'm just curious, you know, are there any plans on the roadmap for that?
You are clairvoyant, sir. We have. It's almost like you're looking at the show notes here. We have a bookmarklet that is in beta right now. It's being tested by a couple of our most trusted users to keep the secret of how the bookmarklet is working right now. But it will be out in production. Hopefully sometime this weekend, I'm going to soft launch it. So if you hear this and you're interested, just hit me up on Twitter and I'll be happy to share with you how to activate the bookmarklet. And then sometime next week, it should be available to everybody and highly advertised on the website.
Congratulations.
But, yeah, it's the first bookmarklet I've done, so it's been a cool learning experience.
Yeah, they're kind of fun, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
It's a little strange, and you start going, "Oh my god, you know, what all could I do with this?"
Totally. And already, I'm planning some kind of the stuff that I want to do in version 2. Like in version 1, I'm loading everything inside an iframe, just to avoid any collisions with CSS and JavaScript
on the page that they're currently on.
Yes. So I open up an iframe a certain size and position it in the center, and that loads up the the new post dialog box in there, yeah, and populates it with the URL and the title for the page that you're on. And then you can write a description if you want, tag it, and then hit post. And a couple of problems with that is, one, how do you close the iframe? That was one of the things I ran into. I'm like, oh, duh. Yep. You can't just have the parent. You know, how do you tell the parent to close the iframe? Because the iframe can't close itself. Yeah. It's actually in the parent's DOM.
Yep.
So I ended up using fragment messaging. So the one thing you can affect as the child in the iframe is that you can change the parent's URL, like the pound part, the fragment, pound, whatever.
Okay, okay.
And so then if you have an observer in the parent that's looking for a certain fragment to be added to the URL up there, which like, close me or whatever,
sure,
something unique, and then it says, oh, okay, cool, and then close the iframe. And then you can just run that every 300 milliseconds or something, and it's not, but that's not such a clean way to do it. So,
was there a reason why you didn't just go with a new window?
Not in an iframe, you mean? Oh, you mean like open a new window entirely?
Yeah, just like what Delicious did or what WordPress does.
Yeah, I've always liked when I use. I guess I've just liked when it's all on one page.
Yeah.
So that was
Bitly,
the reason.
Bitly's does that and has always done a fairly good job at that with too.
Right. So the next step for me is going to be to wrap the iframe in a better container where I'm going to put the close. It's just the round X, up at the top right that kind of hangs off of the iframe a little bit.
Yeah.
And it'll actually be in the parent DOM.
Oh, so then okay. You close, so then that, you can control that.
And I'll also get the nice benefit of you being able to drag the iframe around if it's covering whatever you need to read while you do your post.
Fancy.
Yeah.
So, good.
And then we'll have some Chrome. We got Chrome extensions that will be coming out shortly after that, Firefox extension, that type of thing. So we're really focused right now in Q1, making it easier and better to post to the website. Because right now, you have to go to the website, you have to, copy the URL and log, if you're not logged in, you got to go log in and click the button and then paste it. And it's just such an arduous process. And I totally get that. So I'm trying to make it, I've got a couple of different ways that we're going to make it much, much easier for you to get stuff into the website. So with all that said, you ready to jump into the articles?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. You've been pretty excited about this first article here.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, because they've been around for a while, and so Cloudflare,
yes,
is the name of the service. And it's been around for a long time, and my friends are always like, "Oh, are you using Cloudflare?" I'm like, "No, I don't really see any reason for it." And so finally, I was going through Flipboard the night I was sick, and I just ended up on this page about Cloudflare and how they're really kind of growing and the potential for this company. And so I spent the next 2.5 hours going through every piece of content on their website, and I was like, holy shit. And so I signed up for it for this project that I'm working on, and I only did it on the marketing website. So I didn't do it on the app, or I didn't do it on the store.
Okay, so it's fairly static.
Yeah, exactly. Because that was the one thing as I'm going through here. And there, so to give you kind of an overview, you basically give Cloudflare control over your DNS. So just like, DNS, because nowadays you really don't think about DNS hosting that much. You might register your domain if you go through GoDaddy or name.com or NameZ or whatever else.
Right.
Most of them are handling the DNS stuff for you. And so I never really thought anything about it. But what this company has built is a platform to basically take your DNS control, and they're doing some cool black magic reverse proxy stuff. Mm-hmm. But that every request that's coming into your website, and then they send it off to your servers. But they have all this cool stuff happening in the middle, and that can be content delivery network, where they've got I think 13 servers across the world, and depending on where your visitors are coming from, they're going to get your cached assets on the servers that are closest to them. They've got an optimizer, so you can automatically have your JavaScript, your CSS, your HTML compressed and minified. You can they have security features that can automatically block, you know, denial of service attacks, different kinds of threats that might happen, and I'll get into that in a second, why that's cool of what they're doing. They offer full analytics of what's happening, and then they're also doing apps, and because they control kind of the DNS, they make it real easy to, you know, set up new domain or, you know, new subdomains for different apps that you might want to install for your app. The one thing as they go through and they talk about is that they kind of rewrite your HTML. And so that's the piece that always kind of freaked me out, where I'm like, I really don't want somebody else rewriting my HTML. And so I'm like, okay, I'll try it with just our marketing website. Because what they say here is that on average, a website on Cloudflare will load twice as fast, use 60% less bandwidth, has 65% fewer requests, and is way more secure.
And so, those are requests and bandwidth to your end server.
To my end server, right?
Because they're still serving all the same content. They're just doing it from the CDN.
And they've built everything where they're being delivered off solid state drives, that they're really focused on the bigger that the network gets, the better that the network gets. Exactly what Google did, right? The bigger that the index gets, the better the results get. And so those types of business models always kind of pique my interest. And so when I was reading about the security aspect of what they have, where they can go and they can automatically start learning new kinds of attacks that are happening, and when they identify an attack that's happening on website X, it can automatically block it for website Y and Z.
Right.
So the more websites that are out there, they're going to start getting hit, blah, 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 and boom, all of a sudden they now know that this IP address is a known spammer or is a known, you know, scraping websites for email addresses and shit like that. And then boom, all of a sudden now my website's protected because they found it on some other guy's website. And so that piece, I was like, okay, I really, really like that. Even it can go down to the point where it will automatically obfuscate.
Nicely done.
Thank you. Emails that you just have in plain text on your website.
Really?
Yeah.
That is smart. I like that a lot.
Yeah, really smart. Protected SSL, Telnet, FTP ports. And so one thing that I did notice is, okay, I switched it all over, and then I go to SSH into my box, and it won't connect. I'm like, oh, God. And so, you know, I'm just on the edge the whole time because I'm just not exactly sure what's all happening.
Right.
But then I realized you have to go to direct.domain.com, and they make that a straight pass through to your server.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so there are little things.
On all ports or just like certain ones?
All ports.
Okay.
All ports. And then the other piece too that they've got, they can offer one-click SSL. And now this is for the pro version, so I'm only using the free version, so I don't get that one-click SSL. But what it does is it makes adding SSL to your website just crazy, crazy easy compared to, you know, where before you'd have to go and you'd have to, you know, purchase your own certificate, install it on your server. Then when you have it with Cloudflare, they can use your existing provider or the self-assigned, but it just makes it significantly easier to get set up.
If you don't mind, can you go over that part in a little bit more detail? Because I was under the impression you do still have to have the SSL certificate. Like you go out and buy it and you would install it on your server. And that their pro thing is doing is allowing SSL all the way through their server.
Through their server, yes, and that's right. So they have what they call the Easy Cloud SSL, and that's the Easy Cloud SSL is what is communicating between Cloudflare and the visitor, and then you use your own existing server to be able to, I think, communicate from your site to Cloudflare.
Because you do need a signed SSL cert from a known authority,
Because
if they could get rid of that completely, I'd sign up in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I mean, it's and again, I haven't used it yet, but just going through all the doc, and they, and one thing that I will say they could do a better job of is really kind of explaining what's happening at that lower level, because, you know, some things that I ran into is I had to make some modifications to my CSS and things weren't getting updated. I'm like, what the hell? I'm like, oh yeah, it's Cloudflare. And so I go into my settings, but then what's cool is in their settings area, they have a ton of features, and one of them was, hey, are you in development mode? And you can basically just, you know, toggle the switch to on. And it basically will automatically bypass Cloudflare's accelerators and their caches and all of that stuff, and it will automatically be turned back on 3 hours later.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I just click it, and then I'm working. I can come in here, and I can purge the cache, and it automatically goes through. Another thing that's cool, if the website goes down, if my server goes down, they can deliver up my cached versions.
For a static website, it's very cool.
For static websites, it's very cool.
If you're
cool.
An app, that might be a little strange.
Like, exactly.
You're clicking to, like something.
Log in,
you're like, nothing's happening.
You know, they're just going through some of the settings stuff that they've got here. You know, I can come in here and I can say, yes, I want auto modification on. I want it for just JavaScript CSS, or I want it for, you know, all JavaScript CSS and HTML. I can set minimum times to times TTL. When it should expire, caches. Oh, it also does automatic IP6 networking. IP version 6 networking.
Very nice.
Yeah, so, and what was funny is when I was going through all their stuff, they're talking about how, like, you know, only 1% of the websites have IP version 6 support, and 10% of those are Cloudflare websites.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, it really does. And again, I think this is great for, you know, WordPress sites, you know, sites that, because there is a Cloudflare does have a WordPress plugin that allows you to, that does some of the fixing. Because one thing, since it is a reverse proxy, you do need to change, like if you are used, like you said in the document, if you're using users' IP addresses, you need to look at a different header to get what their actual IP is. And so they've got a WordPress plugin that just makes it all kind of work together perfectly.
Very nice.
And I can definitely tell a difference in speed of the website. I mean, it's definitely faster.
Right.
And I will start slowly kind of poking around, because I've got a Shopify store that I want to try it on and see, you know, if I do notice any kind of noticeable difference. But my God, I mean, all in all, I think this company has the opportunity to get huge. And I saw the number of websites that they're doing now, and it was a huge number, but I don't want to quote it because I can't find it exactly. So I'm kind of in love with what these guys are doing. It's really bad. Oh, analytics.
Right.
Let me tear through. I had all my features here, but their analytics that they offer. You know, I can go through and I can see what's really happening, page views. And now it's not as going to be deep as like a Google Analytics or anything, but it does give you a nice view. But it also shows you potential threats that are happening on your web server. And so where, you know, Google Analytics or GetClicky might be tracking, you know, different bots and different things and not necessarily knowing that that's what they are. That's where these guys can come in and really kind of give you a view of we know that this guy is, you know, this IP address is a known bot that goes around and just scours the web. And so you can really start kind of getting an idea of what your true, you know, visitor counts are. So that was really cool.
I think I just like the real-time traffic alerts on the earth there. So you can actually see like, oh shit, somebody from China, and the thing like spins around. That looks really cool.
Yeah, exactly. So,
that's,
I mean, again, the security piece, I really like that because I'm always afraid, you know. Now, if you have the pro, you can go and stop SQL injection. So, like, it can parse through and make sure that none of the queries that are coming in have any kind of, you know, SQL nefarious shit going on. The DDo, the denial of service attacks, is really cool. So I'm digging all of that. The content delivery piece is just like an added bonus. It's like, oh, cool. You know,
and
automatic. Yeah, you don't mess with anything. So I can go in, I can edit my code, and boom, then it starts propagating out automatically to the, you know, to the 13
and
locations.
It's just free, right?
And it's
a free CDN. So even if you turned off everything else, just use a CDN.
Yes.
Shit.
Yes, free. that would be totally worth it for me. And that, you know, if I need to go in and I need to add subdomains and whatever, they're just as fast, it seems, as like GoDaddy was. Because I was always blown away with how quick GoDaddy would automatically update, you know, when I go in and I set, you know, add a new subdomain or something, where most, like before with network solutions, it seemed to take, you know, 8 weeks. But with GoDaddy, it seemed to literally happen in a matter of moments. So yeah, it's I like Cloudflare, and I would say that if they keep doing what they're doing, they're going to be absolutely huge, because they make it so easy to sign up, right?
Right.
And that was the other piece, is that you go in, you say, okay, I'm ready to sign up, and it says, what's your domain name? And then it plays you a little video, explains you what's going on, and while that's happening, it's going through and it's looking through your current DNS host, all the records and all the, you know, everything that you've got, your MX stuff, your A's, your C names, your blah, 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 blah. Yeah, and it copies it over, and you can go and you can verify it. So I was like, oh, hey, there's like 15 garbage ones from GoDaddy, so don't transfer those over. And it just worked. It's like, this is awesome. And then you go and you set your domain, your DNS name servers to theirs, and boom, you're done.
Nice.
And they say on average, a request is fewer than 10 hops and takes less than 30 milliseconds to get to your content.
Oh, yeah, no wonder. I mean, when they have an edge network like that, that's really good.
Yeah, so Cloudflare is, so far, I haven't had anything that's really bit me in the ass. One thing I did do is I set it up on my stage of my app server. Okay. And I was having some weird things. And again, I was, you know, I'm actively developing on that box. So that didn't necessarily surprise me. They have things where you can pass query strings. They also have things where you can start embedding like different tags in your HTML and automatically like block it if this is a known suspect. So I can have my phone number here, but if it's a bot, go ahead and just not even output it.
Oh, cool. That's crazy.
So
cool.
They have just a ton of features. They really
it's
don't get into it.
Like,
is.
You
it
just
really
look at the
is.
Site, and I'm like, oh, I'm just overwhelmed looking at all this. And they don't. They kind of sell it, but they don't. Like you said, they don't go into great detail.
Yeah.
So it goes like, oh, you know, we have browser integrity and visitor reputation, and then it gives you like a little fairly meaningless description of it. And you're like, well, yeah, but how are you doing that? That sounds cool.
They definitely don't talk about how they go into it and how they do it. And I mean, but if you look at, you know, they have their network map, and they've got like a real-time counters of the number of hits, and that is 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. So that'd be billion. So 787 trillion hits, 130 trillion page views, 65 trillion threads blocked, and the bandwidth saved has been 8 trillion megabytes.
Yeah, it's amazing. So a couple of thoughts that I had on this is, one, some of the – well, I've been working with the guy trying to do some front-end optimization for Talentopoly, which is not like a forte of mine. It's not something I've focused on in the past. So it's been a good learning experience. And, you know, we'll look at like the headers, the cache expire headers that I'm sending out, and see if those are correct. And, you know, really take a deep look at this and even figure out, well, how can we do hosted DNS? Because, you know, the current namecheap.com, which is where I bought the domain, their DNS is a little bit slow. We could save some time there. And it just goes on and on. Like, it's such a endless list.
Yeah.
And, you know, we still have lots of work to do. And we've spent, you know, through the course of months doing it, just really hodgepodge here and there. We've spent a couple of hours combined easily just looking at this stuff. And we got a lot more to go. This is just makes it like almost really automatic.
Yeah.
You just go in and turn this stuff on. Now, it seems like some of it could be dangerous because you might.
Yes.
It's, you know, depending on if you have a static site. Sure, just go for it. And it doesn't use SSL. Now, if you start using SSL, okay, you're going to have to get a pro account immediately, because, you know, if you want SSL for your login, you're going to need that. So, but what price-wise, what is this? It wasn't much, right?
No, it's not much. And it is, I knew I had that open. And then
I think
it's
like 15 a month, I want to say.
Hold on. No, now I'm totally lost.
Ah, I stumped
all
you.
All your fault. You did. Let me go and see if I can just upgrade my account here.
So $20 a month.
$20 a month. Bam. Yep. Damn it. But SSL is included on every plan, is what it says, and will automatically be provisioned. All plans are month to month, no long-term contracts, which is kind of weird because I would think there's only two plans. There's free and Cloudflare.
But if you look at the free, pro, and enterprise, they have the three there that they list.
Yeah. They don't have that option when you're in your settings. Like, you can't upgrade gotcha. Enterprise. You got to call them up. And that's basically them saying, oh, we haven't built an interface for it yet.
It's like, oh, you would like to pay us money. How much do you make? So, but it doesn't show. It has easiest SSL ever is the name of their feature. And there's no check for free. So I think you do need the pro to be able to do your SSL.
Now, I did put this on my blog. So on iCorbin.com is all hosted through that. And I haven't run into any problems so far. I've done a post since then. No, I haven't done a post since then. I'll need to try to do a post since then. But I've had comments and all that, and all seems to be working. I'm able to log in and do all that.
And
so,
I wonder, like, because this gets to the crux that you're getting to it, is the how does it know what to cache and for how long? That's what kind of worries me.
Well, and so it's argument of so you can basically go and adjust your caching level to modify kind of their behavior. And the basic setting will cache most static resources, so your CSS, your images, your JavaScript,
but not HTML.
Yeah, the aggressive one will cache like all static, and this includes, you know, anything with a query string and anything like that. And then you can go like what they call simplified, which will basically ignore query strings when delivering cached resources.
Right.
So you can kind of adjust that, and same thing goes with security. You can adjust it high, medium, low, essentially off. And so you can go through and kind of tweak things, and I mean, this is where you're going to spend most of your time. Another thing that's kind of crazy is automatically asynchronously load your JavaScript resources.
I saw that. I really like that.
So,
that's one thing we did do for talent. Like, half the stuff we've done, but it took us hours, and this thing would have just supposedly done it.
Yeah, and I haven't done it yet, and I will at some point do that, but it's in beta right now, so I was like, I don't really want
to
mess with it.
I'm guessing it moves it all to the bottom, whatever. And that's the other question, too, is like, okay, I run Chartbeat.
Yeah.
Chartbeat requires a piece in the header and a piece in the footer.
Yeah.
Maybe they already know about Chartbeat because it's pretty popular, but you know, what if it's another service that just cropped up and they don't know about it? Are they going to move that header part to the footer? Because, I mean, good front-end optimization, all your JavaScript should load last and asynchronously, so it should be in the footer.
That's the piece where they say, look, you know, depending on how crazy you're getting with JavaScript, this might work and it might not, and you're just going to have to go and kind of try and see the way that it works. So,
I couldn't have them do it asynchronously because that would screw up all the timings in Chartbeat, and they can't. I mean, they got to leave it alone for it to work.
Oh yeah. Don't touch those.
Right.
And you know, the server side include stuff that they got is pretty cool. But yeah, it's definitely worth checking out and saying, hey, if I can, you know, offload that and anything I can, you know, slowly start stripping away from GoDaddy, I'm all for.
So here's my final comment on it.
Okay.
I'm gonna put my grandpa hat on. This is, you know, we walked uphill both ways in the snow. So you were talking about preventing SQL injection. I mean, shouldn't good programmers be doing – I mean, you shouldn't need to require a service to do that.
Absolutely.
Make you lazy and make it so, oh, I don't need to worry about if I'm gzipping stuff, or I don't need to worry about any of that. Cloudflare's just going to take care of it.
Lazy developers are a guarantee.
Right.
Right. There's always going to be shitty developers, and they're already going to be out there. So it might make them easy. The more thing I'm worried about is the denial of service stuff that I don't have the technical know-how to even stop if it would start.
True.
Right. Those are the types of things. SQL injection, I don't care because I'm not doing any SQL shit. Right.
Right.
But for the most part, now my blog would be, though, because since it's WordPress,
protected from
hypothetically, you know, but who knows, with some asshole who comes out with some plugin that I installed that I thought looked great, and you know, it doesn't escape the query strings, it comes in and, you know, just destroys everything.
Right.
So those would be kind of nice. And as the masses start getting more and more comfortable with building websites and doing things that they probably shouldn't be, those are probably the ones who would be more beneficial to.
True. Okay. So powerful weapon, but know how to wield it.
Exactly. So check it out, because I do think that, you know, as these guys grow, I think they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. Google, Google speed test or page speed. What do they call it?
The page speed service.
Yes.
Such a horrible name.
Exactly. Like most of the stuff that they do. It offers a lot of the same kind of functionality.
Well, they go into very little detail. So
Basically, give us your DNS. I mean, again, right. Anybody who's thinking about this, you do have to realize that when you're giving control of your DNS over to some company, I mean, that's a lot of power. I mean, mm-hmm. It really is. I mean, they control a whole lot of stuff. And so it's...
Well, I guess, it's putting a middleman there. Like you said, when you tried SSH and, you know, you're like, mm-hmm. Oh, I need to SSH in. I got to use this other thing. Yep. You've got this, like, you know, silent middleman in between that you can't forget about or it's going to hurt you.
Exactly.
You know, like that stuff getting cached, like, oh, I need it in development mode, and this is what I do to S. So it is adding some complexity, but it's doing so much more that it's probably worth it.
Yeah. So I'll keep you posted on my progress with it. And if and when I switch it over on the platform side of the product. But definitely worth checking out.
Do they have a test on here where you could at least point it to your URL and then it could maybe just make it whatever it wants to do and then you could compare the speeds or something without...
No, it was pretty much, hey, you want to play?
Yeah.
Then you gotta give us all your shit.
I would feel better if I could at least just say, oh, talentopoly.com, you know, show me what you're going to do and show me if it really, how much faster it is. That would be cool.
Yeah, that would be really cool. And there'd be no reason why they couldn't do it since they're just doing the reverse proxy stuff.
Yeah. Before I hand over my DNS, just like prove to me that this is going to really do well.
Yeah.
Not that I totally doubt it, but okay. We can move on.
I like it.
Oh, one last note on that, actually, before we move on. One thing you might want to think about, and this is something I do in Talentopoly, is I do look at the IP address, the people visiting Talentopoly. So that I can count unique views of things, and I use it in a couple of other places. You won't get the unique IP address if you use something like Cloudflare, but luckily the HTTP header will have that person's IP address. It'll just be in a different place. It'll be in the X forwarded 4 property. So you can still get it, just you need to look in a different place. So be aware of that. You're going to have to change some app code for doing that.
They also, though, and they also pass the country of origin.
Very cool.
So right there, right off the bat, you don't need to be doing IP look or, you know, geolocation off the IP or anything like that. You can actually pull that and boom, right in your application,
That's a very good point, actually.
Do whatever you want with it. So I do like that feature, and I'll probably leverage that on my website.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to the next article. Our next article is about CodeYear. And this is Resolve to Learn to Program in 2012. CodeYear is started by the fine folks over at Code Academy. And these people, if you don't know, have got a real hit on their hands. They have over 1 million users already signed up on their website. And they offer interactive programming courses on there. Right now, it's limited to JavaScript. I think everything on there is JavaScript.
Yeah.
But what they did is they got this great idea. I love this idea. It's such a good example of a startup that's already doing well, but figuring out how can we even reach more people. And email is such a good way, like having a weekly or monthly or some non-intrusive high-value email that you automatically send out is a great way to keep re-engaging your audience. And so they did this with a newsletter called CodeYear. And what it does is it'll email you a new lesson every week. So if you're wanting to learn how to program or interested in programming JavaScript, and hopefully they'll open it up to some other languages here soon. They have Ruby and Python in beta, right, in a closed beta right now. But they will email you out a lesson and say, here's your lesson of the week. Go try this out. Have you checked out Code Academy yet?
I did. I checked out Code Academy. And you know, all in all, I like what all of these things are doing. I've never gotten into one where I was like, yes, I absolutely have to keep following through.
Right.
Right. And that's, and maybe that's just a fault of my own where I haven't been able to get excited enough to want to go back and continue to learn.
Well, arguably, I don't think we're really the target market for these.
True.
For that. I mean, true. Now, who do you think it is?
Yeah, so... But so what is that? Is that a kid?
Well, surprisingly, I don't know if you've read this, but Mayor Bloomberg resolved to learn how to program this year.
Oh, gee. Yeah. I can't tell you how many people have told me that in 2012, I'm going to learn how to code.
In 48 hours, they signed up over 100,000 people for CodeYear's newsletter.
That's insane.
So there are a lot of people interested.
And have you gotten those emails?
Yep. I signed up for it.
Affiliate marketing or anything like that where you can go and buy stuff in the email?
I did not notice anything like that, no.
Where are they
making? I read emails quickly, so I won't say for sure it didn't happen, but I don't think they did that, no.
How do they make their money?
Good question. Right now, I don't know. They're a Y Combinator startup.
Okay, so they're not going to make
money. They have some funding at the moment. Yeah. So I really don't know. Maybe they'll have, I would imagine they probably will have plans, you know, packages. And if you want in the future, if you want the Primo courses or whatever the situation is, they'll charge for something. But right now, they're just doing a big user grab, and they're doing it really successfully.
Yeah, it almost feels like when Groupon first launched, and it was the main goal is just to get as many emails as humanly possible. Because really, I mean, that's where you can make. I mean, you can make a shitload of money if you've got a really targeted list like that.
Totally.
And you know, yeah. So 357,000. That's pretty impressive.
It is. So I took it upon myself in preparation for the podcast to check out Code Academy. You know, I was doing the Code Year stuff, and the Code Year stuff, I don't know why I thought this, but I thought maybe those would be new lessons. But what they are lessons that already exist on Code Academy that they have structured in, you know, the same way that they are in Code Academy, in a progressive manner. So you start out really simple, learn the basics, like how do I do a variable? Okay, now do a dot length on that, you know, and continue to progress. And that's basically the path you're on, just doing it weekly versus at your own speed. With the newsletter.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like they're using Twitter Bootstrap.
Oh, cool. I didn't even get into it to that. I didn't look at their source code.
No, that just awesome. just by the look of it, everything's kind of... And if not, then it's one that looks just like it.
But they have recreated Twitter Bootstrap.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but again, I think anything that's going to make it so, you know, as a new person who gets online is like, you know, I really want to learn how to code. I can just come here. I don't need to install servers. I don't need to dick with a whole bunch of stuff. I can just come here and I've got a console right in my face. And it's like, hey, type Ryan, you know, or whatever. Those are invaluable. And I hope more and more people do them and they become kind of a norm. And I hope schools start trying to take leverage, you know, take this stuff, because most schools don't have the technical chops to be able to provide anything remotely close to this, right? I mean, most of the teachers who like to say that they're coders are kind of a joke. So to be able to have things like this where we can really start getting kids engaged and getting best practices from people who can build shit like this is awesome.
I like it. And so they're really... what I found is looking at all these different coding, learn to code websites, is that they broke down into two camps. One are the more progressive, interactive coding tutorials where you actually are having to type. They're checking to see if you did it right. And only when you type the right code in do you get to progress to the next lesson. And some of them will offer hints to help you along the way if you get stuck, whatever. The other route that some of these sites go, and Team Treehouse really exemplified this, was using video. So if you're the type of person that... you learn best from really listening and, you know, wanting to, you know, you don't need to be hands-on. You just want somebody to explain how this stuff works. It can be a much faster way to learn, because in about 7 minutes, the guy during the video is going to cover a lot more territory, really, than what you're going to do going through what at times can be fairly mundane. Like, okay, var equals, you know, var first name equals Jared. Yeah. Jared dot length. I mean, it gets pretty mundane at times. So the screencast, if that's how you like to learn, that could be a really good option for you. Right now, the best one I found for doing screencasts was Team Treehouse, which you do have to pay for. But it seemed well worth it to me, and from the little bit that I tried it out, because they did a really good job of organizing, not just, like, they had way more than JavaScript on there. They had learned CSS and HTML, and you should learn those first. And then we should go over some programming fundamentals. And then they take you to the, you know, I guess it was JavaScript on there. And they really just took you all the way through, all the way up, building you up to the point where you could learn iOS and Objective-C programming.
Wow.
Yeah. And then they, you know, they go through all of that. So it was really cool in the fact that you're not going to just, you know, do simple programming in JavaScript. You're going to learn how to be a web developer and even a mobile app developer through the course of this. Not expert level. Of course, you know, they don't get into really crazy expert stuff there, but you're going to get the fundamentals and they're going to walk you along. And I kind of felt comforted by the fact that, hey, there's this person talking to me, going over what I, you know, telling me what I need to learn and explaining it to me in the screencast. So I actually did kind of enjoy that. I was hoping that the code, interactive coding things would move a little bit faster and keep me engrossed, and they didn't really keep my attention as much.
Yeah, yeah. And like you said, though, maybe we're not that target.
Totally.
And it looks
not
like Treehouse is $49 a month for their gold and $25 per month for their silver plan.
Excellent. Thank you. I was quickly looking for that and did not find it. So, Code Academy is completely free, and they are adding Python and Ruby in the near future. And I think they're going to really explode in the fact that they are welcoming people to submit lessons and courses, entire courses of lessons, and create them and submit them. And hopefully some of that user contributed stuff is going to start getting in there and be high quality. And that directory of lessons and courses is just going to explode.
Mm-hmm.
So I really look forward to that. Another one I really liked was Ruby Monk. And there was actually a couple of lessons on there that I would say that get a little bit more advanced. So there were some, you know, it starts out with like introduction to arrays and things like that, but they end up getting into some higher end stuff like metaprogramming in Ruby and using Lambda and some things I would consider significantly advanced. So there's some cool stuff there. I also liked how, like in Code Academy, you're just seeing your current lesson and you have to progress through the whole thing and hit next and it loads up a new page. In Ruby Monk, they just put them all in a vertical line, you know, like a bunch of them. So yeah. You can really see, okay, these are the next five I'm going to do. And it kind of kept me a little bit more interested. And then I could click next and get my next five and just kind of run through them a little bit quicker. So that was kind of nice.
So you became a better Ruby programmer.
I hope so. No, I don't.
Maybe. No,
I don't think so.
So maybe it's not if you're a programmer right now. Maybe it's not the best use of your time. But for those of you, Ryan Cox, who wants to get out there and start learning, let's see if he listens, and want to learn how to program, these are obviously some killer resources.
I would love, and I think Code School could, they're tending towards some of this, like they're leaning towards this way already. And I hope to see some really notable programmers, and heck, I'd love to see design stuff as well, like design screencasts or, you know, if there's a way to do more interactive type.
I'll tell you what, some of the best lessons that I've had, both giving and receiving like design stuff, is watching somebody do it.
Yep.
Because you see them and you go, oh, son of a bitch, that's how they do it. They use this and they use that and they use this filter.
Yep.
You know, so absolutely. I think having a design screencasts would be huge. And more so than, you know, because like a lot of times you have those posts that are like, you know, 400 page scrolls long. And it's just, you know, here's every single box that I've clicked to get this effect and get all that. But just watching somebody, you really start kind of getting a feel, especially somebody who really knows the application. Like all the different tips and tricks that you can use. It's an amazing way of learning how to mm-hmm. use those design tools.
Absolutely. And Team Treehouse.
Beautiful segue too, by the way.
Well, Team Treehouse did actually have, they do have some Photoshop screencasts in there. So that was also really cool. I actually am considering getting, try the Treehouse thing out a little bit more and getting an account there. But just to finish up here, Code School was another one I really liked. And that one, they've got some jQuery stuff on there. They've got some newer things like responsive web with initializer. I don't even know what initializer is, so I'm kind of intrigued to check that one out.
Isn't that the one that does HTML5? Like it makes sure that's modernizer.
Right.
Never mind.
Right. Yeah. So some more modern stuff and not just fundamentals there. And you can get their Rails for Zombies, which is just such an awesome name. You can get that first course for free. They are charging for part two of that. And their cost is, I think, $25 a month to get access to their Code TV, they call it. So a couple of good things out there if you're wanting to learn more fundamentals. But yeah, let's segue into the next article. And by saying segue, I am segueing. That's my segue.
Yeah, I don't think we're allowed to say segue for the segue.
That's how I do it. I cheat.
Yeah, but so this is the 10 plus best free or open source Photoshop alternative software. And, you know, so for this one, I'm just going to tear through the ones that are on the list, and then I'm going to go through and kind of nitpick each one of them as we go through them. But it's for all of you guys out there who don't want to drop the $500 or whatever the monthly
raping. Hey, maybe you're
raping.
A student. You don't have the money.
There are good
reasons why you may not want to drop that much on Photoshop. Jeez.
Exactly. Or you might be against pirating it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Through the list, let's just tear through the list real quick.
Do it.
We've got Gimp, which is obviously the you know, the silverback gorilla in the room. We have Gimp Shop, which is kind of a modification of Gimp to make it have a lot of the same Photoshop nomenclatures and the menu structures and things like that to try to make it more like Photoshop. But if you're really that familiar with Photoshop, you probably have it. Whatever. Yeah. the Pixel Editor. PIXLR, and this is an online one, and it's done in Flash, and I'm going to stick on that one a little bit later. Paint.net. Now, I didn't get to try this because this is only a .net, but it is an open source photo editing software, and it runs on Windows.
It
definitely looks Photoshop-y. It's got a lot of plugins, and it looks like there's a good amount of support for it, and there's a lot of tutorials, so who knows what you can do. Usually what I try to do when I look at these types of tools, I go online and I look for things that were designed or created in that application and kind of look at what kind of stuff there was.
I love that they called it Paint.
I know, Paint. Just paint.net. So this is the newer version. So
it should ship with Windows 8. And then we've got rid of Paint.
Choco Flop. and this one I'm going to completely ignore because they haven't updated in about two and a half, 3 years. But it does use the Apple's core image technology, which, again, I am surprised more people haven't tried to leverage that. But, hey, whatever.
Yeah, it uses GPU.
Yeah, so but it was really basic. Anyway, yeah. We've got SplashUp, which is another web-based tool, and to make it look like Flickr or Photoshop. Krita, which I don't have any way of running this. I know nothing about it, and so I'm not going to say anything intelligent about it. Pixia, P-I-X-I-A, which was originally a Japanese editor, and it looks like it was a Japanese editor for Windows 95. The interface on that is awful. And then you've got Photoshop Express Editor, which is more just like, hey, I need to color correct some photos, or I want to do some cool little things to photos, but not really if you want to go and start creating, like actually creating stuff. So there's our list, right?
Dude, take a drink of wine. You deserve a drink after that.
Okay, hold on.
We'll wait. That was impressive.
Okay. So let's go. GIMP. Hey, GIMP is you know, if you can't afford Photoshop and you absolutely need something and you're on Windows or Linux, GIMP is a great way to go. It's going to have most of the features that you're going to expect. It's going to have a ton of plugins. It's going to have a lot of different support. For me personally, coming from Photoshop, right, I've been on Photoshop really since it came out. Using GIMP has always felt a little less, and it could just be the way that things blurred or the way things, you know, bent or the way colors adjusted. It just always felt a little off to me.
It makes you feel gimpy.
It makes me feel a little gimpy, but I'll tell you what.
It's the worst name ever for this
thing. It's an awful name. On Windows, though, the interface is not really bad at all. And on Linux, the interface can look really good. But my God, when you get this thing on, so like if you try to go and you go to GIMP to download and you want to download the Windows or the Mac binary, they're like, yeah, sorry, we don't do that. But here, you can go download, you know, GIMP for OS X over here. Mm-hmm. And so you've got to run it through the X11 windowing. And so it's just completely feels out of place. Certain things that I don't like about it, like I have a Wacom tablet. And so I like the pressure sensitivity that you can have with your Wacoms, and it doesn't support any of that. So there's
But you could always write the code and just it's open source branding.
I could write it myself, and I'm not. So again, GIMP is a good tool, but where I keep going back, and same with GIMP Shop, it's the same
why
thing.
Not GIMP Shop? Like, is GIMP Shop
There's no real, like, yes, this is better than the other than if you want to have your menus have like the same text that Photoshop does. Right?
But I mean, so that's not preferable. Like, you wouldn't like that. It's not any worse. It's just same menu names.
Yeah, no, because really it's like they're, you know, each application is different in its own right. So like when I go to Fireworks, I don't expect to have the same menu structure that I have in Photoshop. Right. That doesn't matter that much to me at all. Now, maybe like, you know, if I was really quick with all the key commands and all that. But for the most part, you know, when I'm doing Photoshop, I know exactly what I need to achieve. But I'm going to go back to this and I don't know how to say it. Pixlr. P-I-X-L-R. And it is the online one that's in Flash. And it is amazing. It is amazing to a point where I could see me using this when I need to do quick graphics and stuff. I mean, it has everything that you would need. It's got the magic wand. It's got the lasso tool. It's got blurs. It's got healing where you can go and, you know, start healing.
It looks blending. I like that it's very Photoshop-y.
It's
I
very really Photoshop-y. Like the one thing that these all have in common, too, is they have all the same floating frigging windows, and I hate those. Yes. I hate all the different floating tools and stuff. I want, if my application, I want one frame. I want tabs in that frame, and I want to be able to organize those things. You Photoshop, you can now do that. And luckily, you know, Adobe got onto that bandwagon, but a lot of these tools haven't.
That's always been a gripe of mine with GIMP. It's always driven me crazy.
I really need 400 damn windows floating around for different toolbars and all that shit.
Least with Photoshop, you know, before this new version and Pixlr, you know, you could just, the way it opens, it looks like it's all in one app. And, you can drag them off onto the background of your desktop, but you don't have to. But GIMP is just, they're all out there. They're just naked out there.
GIMP is ugly. There's no doubt about it, right? GIMP is like a Linux wannabe Photoshop. It really is.
It's been around forever, too.
Yeah, and no matter what, though, what it comes down to is it all really depends on the person's talent who's using the tool, right? Because we've seen amazing shit done in Paint.
Yep.
Right? And we've seen
things
amazing
things done.
Things
that should never have been done in Paint.
Exactly. So you've got these – if you've got some people with some serious talent, they can make it look amazing in any of these tools depending on which ones they know. But for me, if you're really looking like, look, I need to go and I need to do some photo editing. I need to make this guy in the yard disappear, whatever it is, I really like Pixlr.
That's
my recommendation is Pixlr.
What would your runner-up be?
My runner-up would be GIMP. You know, but if you want to download the whole 89 meg or whatever it is,
not Pixia. You didn't like the Pixia, the Japanese editor.
Oh my God. You have to go look at it just for the screenshot of it because it is atrocious. I mean, it has the old, like what the old ribbon was back in Windows 95.
Oh, right? Maybe
with those
3.1.
super square beveled buttons. Oh, it's makes me want to
those icons at the top remind me of 3.1.
Yes, 3.1. There we go. That's it. I mean, it really is. It's awful. So just completely ignore it. But check out that Pixlr. Because now the one thing that it doesn't do, because I sat with my Wacom tablet and I was doing different drawings and different kind of gradations and shading and all that stuff, it does just max the hell out of your CPU. You know, I mean, there's no denying it. I had that thing full screen. I mean, it was taking up my, you know, my 24-inch here. But I was doing serious editing with this web app, and it really did blow me away. I mean, right clicking, I was able to have my layers and go through and select different layers, do different kinds of adjustments. They've got layer styles. They have everything that you would really expect to have from, you know, a Photoshop like app, but it's all happening right in your browser. Opening images from your desktop are just, it's damn near instant. It really did blow me away. And this is the first time that I saw is when we started discussing this article here. And I will definitely be sending people to this one. And it's amazing. It really is a great application.
It would be cool because it's just Flash. I mean, you can make a copy of that and you can just throw that on thumb drive or something. You know, with a Flash installer, and then pretty much any computer. I mean, even if it doesn't have a web connection, boom, you've got yourself a nice little Photoshop.
I wonder why they didn't try to do like an error. Yeah. I guess maybe because they're really, I think, where their business model is. Because I can go there and I can start doing whatever I want,
right.
And then
and
if I want to save things, and so they want to get me to log in and sign up for. But my God, it is a very, it's an amazing, amazing Flash application. And I've built some Flash applications before using Flex, and this one was just, it just blew my mind.
Excellent.
Cool. And I mean the magic wand piece is what really got me. I mean the magic wand just kind of worked. You know, I was bringing in logos because I wanted to see, okay, how well does it do with like a vector like shape? And boom, I was pulling out logos and it looked pretty damn good just by me selecting the different elements and copying it and pasting it into a new layer. It's a killer application. So the guys at Pixlr, I my hats are off to you. I'm not usually a fan of Flash at all anymore, but this is a great use of it. It really
is.
Does. There's no way in hell you could probably pull this off, especially cross-platform,
right.
You know, using any of the HTML5 stuff.
Right. You'd have a ton of JavaScript.
Yeah, it would be insane. I mean, the blur effects, it's awesome. I love it. That's my recommendation. Check out Pixlr. That's what you need to use. Don't waste your time with the other guys.
I don't think we mentioned it, but this article was posted by Sarah McAleer on
Talentopoly. Oh, and she also talks about Sumo in that post.
I love Sumo. Yeah, Sumo. I've been using Sumo for a couple of years now, and that's another online one and really nice.
Yeah, and it has a lot of the same kind of functionality. I will say, though, I like Pixlr's the way they handle the drawing pieces of it. So again, I go and I use my Wacom tablet, and it seems like they don't pick up some of the nuances as well as Pixlr does.
Excellent.
And I just that was me dropping my Wacom pen right there.
Nice, to prove that you have it.
I do.
Now we know. Because nothing else could have made that sound.
So, yeah, so there's my take. It was a good article, but yeah, don't waste your time with the others.
Let's move on to our last article here. Cushy CMS posted by Arlo Carrion. I don't do a lot of work with CMSs, so I took it upon myself to really dive into, you know, research a lot of the different CMS offerings out there as a part of this. And the first thing I did was I looked at this thing Arlo posted, Cushy CMS. It's by some folks out of Australia. And what they're trying to... And I think this is a really good sweet spot, because if you're highly technical, you probably don't really need something like this, or there we'll get to it, but there are even other CMS offerings out there that you might like. Cushy CMS is for that. Maybe it's a client, maybe it's, you know, you're just doing it for a friend or something. They've got a business type website set up. They've got the design for it, and all they want to be able to do is change like whatever that, you know, featured product of the week is, or the, you know, this ad up here in the top right every week, or they just want to write a little new news blurb on the front page. And so they just want to change these things in a really simple, safe manner. Cushy CMS is great for this. The way it works is you take the HTML and you just, it all works over FTP, so it's really basic, but you just add a Cushy CMS class to any of the container elements, the divs or whatever, you know, you've got your content inside of. And any, it's going to look once you upload that to the server, and then you also give Cushy CMS. So you use whatever FTP client you want to upload your stuff, and you use whatever you want to make your HTML, and that's all good. And then Cushy CMS, you just give it access to your FTP server. It goes and looks at it, the files that you tell it to look at, and start parsing. And it looks for the Cushy CMS class, and is like, oh, I'm going to make that editable right through my admin backend here. So, and then you hand out logins to your, quote, editors, so that they can log in and change that image or that text on the front page whenever they want. And then it'll automatically zip that out.
And so this is all web-based. Meaning that you actually go through CMS.com and to manage your content.
That's right, yep. And I really like this for the total non-techie client or whoever that you're doing this for. I think this could actually be something that you might want to put, you know, possibly push to clients.
Now, do you know, like, do they offer kind of like iterator kind of style where I can say, yes, I want to make this editable, but I want to make it duplicatable, you know, or like I've got a news article headline,
right,
and they can go in there and edit it or add a new one. Do they do anything like that?
I'm not sure if you can duplicate your blocks like that.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that you probably just do that in the HTML.
Well, because like Dreamweaver, so it kind of sounds a lot like Contribute was.
Yes.
Right, where you go through and you can kind of tag your HTML. You can put different kinds of, you know, whether a comment or something in line,
yep,
to be able to go and make those types of modifications. Now, what's their pricing like?
Their pricing is they have a free plan, which is pretty limited. It doesn't give you, support-wise is a little bit limited. You can't rename images and uploads. Or no, you can rename the images and uploads. You cannot use your own logo. You can't use your own domain name. Customizing the WYSIWYG appearance. Custom welcome emails. No ads in the admin interface. These are all things that you're going to have to suffer through.
Okay.
Unless you pay for it. If you pay for it, it's $28 a month, so not too bad. I'm thinking
Looks like you have unlimited sites, pages, and editors, right, with that $28 a month. So if you're doing a lot of these types of things for clients, that really starts paying off pretty easily.
This seemed like the best of the bunch if you're doing it for somebody else. This is the one I would recommend.
Do they support SFTP?
Yes, they did.
Okay,
yep. Good. Yeah, I was happy to see that. So some of these different CMS offerings I found because of a discussion about Octopress and Jekyll that happened a couple of weeks ago on Talentopoly. And people were talking to one of our members, Nick Peelman, who he's on this hunt to really find a good CMS tool that isn't going to isn't going to require you to install Rails, Ruby, and possibly other parts start doing rate tasks and pull down gems and really do all these developer things just to do a basic static website CMS.
Yeah.
But sure, they let you do lots of things, but that's kind of crazy to have to do all that, set RVM up and everything. But he still wants it to not be so dumbed down that, it goes to the opposite end of the spectrum where it's like iWeb dumb, which, iWeb is all right, but, he wants something in the middle. So I was kind of intrigued by that. I'm like, all right, well, let me look around. And, I mainly just looked at the ones that were mentioned in the discussion thread, but I looked at Octopress and Jekyll just because, I am a developer, so I am kind of interested in what that's offering. And what Jekyll is GitHub created this. It's a way to use Markdown in text files, be able to create a layout that's going to be, you just create that once and everything's going to inherit that layout just like you would be used to in most web frameworks. And then you run it through a templater, which is Liquid, that they're using. So you can actually put some for loops in there and stuff like that in your templating language. But ultimately, all that Markdown is going to get turned into all those files and Markdown will get turned into a static website that the whole thing can be rsynced up or uploaded up to whatever your host is, including GitHub. You just use GitHub to host that type of a website as well. So that seemed pretty cool, but it is all command line driven and it does require some good familiar. You probably have to be pretty familiar with Ruby. If things like setting up RVM and installing Ruby through RVM and downloading gems isn't something you've ever done before, this may not be the right CMS for you.
Yeah.
If you're a Ruby dev looking for a good static site generator, check out Jekyll, and Octopress is just a nice framework that goes on top, gives you some helpers, nice HTML5 theme to go along with it. If you're going to use Jekyll, I would say use Octopress. It seems to take some of the pain out of it, so that was cool. Some of the other stuff I looked at was, surprisingly, a lot of these things I came across were actually Ruby-powered. I was surprised by that.
Yeah.
Nesta was one, and Nanoc was the other. So Nesta is a Ruby CMS, again, for developers and designers. So this falls into that Jekyll thing where you're doing bundle installs to install your gems and writing the... It's just basically a different flavor. I didn't see anything hugely different here. Do Markdown or, there's a textile is supported by Nesta. So you can check it out. If you're looking at something like Jekyll or Octopress, maybe check this out and see if you like the syntax a little bit better. But that's about the only difference there. Nanoc is a Ruby, they call it a Ruby web publishing system for building small to medium-sized websites. So at least they don't start off too geeky with the speak. I kind of like that. And then they support things like HAML as well. And it looks, that one looks pretty nice and probably pretty lightweight. So that one doesn't seem to require quite as much to get started and going with. But again, it's Ruby based.
Yeah.
Another one was Pulse CMS. I took a look at this one. It's trying to do some of the stuff that Cushy is doing. So at first I was intrigued because I'd already seen Cushy and I was liking what I saw there. Like maybe Pulse is going to be along that same vein, and they had a buy now for $25 and it's the thing you download. I'm like, okay, this is cool. No monthly fee. You can just, if you really do have your own server or your own, sysadmin guy, you can just set this up for you, save a little bit of money there. But it kind of does a hideous thing where instead of you just adding classes to your HTML elements, you are having to do PHP includes. You take that whole section out of your HTML that you've coded up. You've got it all set with the div and the classes and IDs that you want on it. And then you cut the whole thing out. You put it into Pulse, and Pulse assigns you that snippet of the PHP include saying, take this and put this in your HTML. And then that thing you download, you have to go install on your server so it knows how to inject all that back into your HTML. And I was really disenchanted at that point, kind of stopped looking at it.
Yeah, that's stupid.
Yeah, I think that was the worst of the bunch.
Oh, hey, I got an answer, too, for the repeatable regions.
Okay.
That is available, but it's in the pro version. When you go check out the features and pricing of Cushy. And also, I'd like to say that they have quite possibly the worst sticker effect I have ever seen on this page. It was, you know, like a lot bad. Of things have the sticker, and then they try to do the flip. I mean, check it out just for the laugh of that. The whole graphic is god-awful.
Right.
It was like, hey, let's do a bunch of Mac OS X icons, like half-ass, and try to stuff them into a really shitty-looking box. But anyway, they do offer repeatable regions.
Very cool. Another one I just came across today. I didn't get time to really look into it, but it's called Concrete 5 CMS. So another thing to check out. Looks like it is something that runs, that you download, but I'm not sure of that. Have you heard of Concrete 5 before?
Nope.
Okay. It's got WYSIWYG editor and that sort of stuff. Actually, maybe it is entirely online. I don't know. Something to check out. So... that's pretty much it for this episode of the podcast. Do you have any last words there, Brandon?
Live long and prosper.
I like it. And next, the next podcast, 2 weeks from now, we will be talking about Guidely, building a jQuery website tour, and tons of other great jQuery plugins and JavaScript plugins for doing tours, which ones we looked at and which ones we thought were the best and worst. So tune in for that. And as always, you can subscribe to us. Subscribe to the podcast via RSS. You can find us on Twitter at Talentopoly. We're also on Instacast, and of course, we're on iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.